Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Three-year-old Timmy was visiting his friend Josh. Josh was going to be a big brother soon and was very excited. He was telling Timmy all about the new baby growing inside his mom. Josh's mother saw Timmy's eyes grow wider and wider. Finally, she said, "Would you like to feel the baby kick?" She carefully placed Timmy's tiny hand on her tummy. Together, they waited patiently until Timmy felt a slight push against his palm. "Ooh," he cooed, "it really does move in there." Then a little shyly, he looked up at Josh's mom. "Do you think we could order one from you for our house?" How can we help our young kids with the facts of life? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is a well-known expert on helping children learn about sex. Deborah Rothman is a nationally certified sexuality and family life educator and the associate editor for education of the Journal of Sex Education and Therapy, the author of Sex and Sensibility, The Thinking Parent's Guide to Talking Sense About Sex, and How'd I Get In There in the First Place. Deborah has been featured in the national media. She's also the mother of two grown sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Debbie.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Why is it important to talk to our young children about reproduction and sex?
I think it's important to talk to our young children about everything. And this topic is no exception, and it's really no different. When children are naturally curious about everything in their environment and everything about their own bodies and themselves and their family life, and when they ask questions, we need to be able to respond just as we do all other subjects, or else they get the idea that we're not available to them about this particular subject.
And, of course, when they're young, they have a much greater tendency to listen.
Yes, they have a much greater tendency. Very good. And also, they have a much greater tendency to ask because they're so naturally curious about everything. And when parents put off these conversations or set them aside for later, and then when later comes, it's often much more awkward because then they put pressure on themselves to bring it up, and they're not quite sure how, and it creates unnecessary strain.
It sounds like parents need to arm themselves beforehand with sort of knowing what it is they might say when these things come up.
Yeah, and also what it is that their children might ask. The more you know about your own child's development, whether it's about sexuality or any other subject, the more prepared you feel, the more ready you are for the kinds of things that are going to come your way, and the more confident you feel as a parent.
How would you respond to parents who think that talking about sex will have negative effects on their children? If we don't mention it, they probably won't think about it.
Once again, I would point those parents to a greater understanding of normal child development. And what I've been hearing from parents in the 30 years that I've been working with them is that children ask a predictable sequence of questions, often starting at about the age of 4. And if parents will tune in and be very careful about answering the question on the level at which it's being asked, children will just continue to ask this sequence of questions, and adults will be able to provide them with the kind of information that they're seeking and set the stage for later conversations to come.
It sounds like we really have to listen to what it is they're
and
specifically
be willing to
asked.
Listen, because if we're anxious about a subject, kids will pick it up. You know, they're vacuum cleaners for feelings, particularly when they're young, because most of their learning is nonverbal.
How influential has the media been on making younger children curious about sexuality?
As I indicated, children are naturally curious about this subject. We don't have to make them curious or stop them from being curious any more than we would want to do about anything else in their environment. What the media has done is pique their curiosity about not sex per se, but about sexiness. Because children are constantly being exposed to images of very, very sexy people. And they are projected to them in ways that are designed to get people's attention. So that it's the issue of sexiness, which is not really the level of the conversation that we need to be having with young children, that concerns me. And that children, young children now, I'm being told, are emulating, acting like some of those sexy people in those ads. Because all adults, all people in a child's life are role models. The other thing that the media does is it grossly distorts the importance of sex in people's lives. I often remind parents that you have to think of your children as being like little Martians. They're just plopped down in this culture. They eventually have the language, but they really don't know anything about the culture. They're just looking around. And if you could imagine a Martian coming down to Earth for a 24-hour period and looking at popular culture, wouldn't they go back to Mars and say, yeah, well, you want to know what makes those people tick? It's sex. That's all they talk about all day long. And as a result, children must get this idea that it is all important, that it's the center of the universe, that it's very important to be sexy, to be knowledgeable about sex. And as I said, it gets distorted all out of proportion in children's minds.
So do you think kids are more informed or misinformed at an earlier age today?
Well, thinking about sexuality in the ways I just mentioned is certainly something that I would call misinformed, because it's grossly distorted. It also misinforms children on another level, which is sex is so commercialized now that almost everything you look at nowadays is sold with a sexual message of some sort or another, even things that have absolutely nothing to do with sex, which is terribly demeaning. I mean, how important could something be if you use it to sell backpacks and toothpaste and all kinds of other things in your life? So kids are getting the distorted view that sex is meaningless, that it's depersonalized, that it's not about relationships. So it's not the informational part that I'm so concerned about. It's the context, or really the lack of human context, in the images that children of all ages are seeing now about sexuality at every turn.
Do you think it's significant that the media is using younger and younger people to have this sexy sort of appeal to whatever age?
I not only think it's significant, I find it a little terrifying, actually. Yeah. Recently, I've been hearing stories about little girls coming to school in very short pants that say hot stuff across the rear. Oh. It is very, very troubling, and I think we all need to take a good hard look at this. I saw an ABC Evening News story just 3 or 4 weeks ago about how marketers are now targeting, in their marketing research, toddlers and infants, that apparently if you get a toddler to identify your logo, I can't remember if it's by age 2.5 or 3.5, you have them as a lifelong consumer.
Oh, my goodness.
It makes like an imprint in the brain, it sounds like.
Right. This is about manipulation. This is, you know, it's the Pied Piper, really, in another form. And I find too many adults not seeing it. Our culture changes so rapidly that I think we're so almost immune to the changes around us that we haven't really been paying enough attention in the last 5 or 7 years to the world that our children are living in. We have to learn to look at the world through their eyes. At the moment, it's pretty troubling. This is about dollars and cents. This is, and you have to remember that these advertisements are not only selling products, they're selling a way of life. They're selling a set of attitudes about what's important in life and a set of attitudes about sexuality that are not at all healthy for our children. And I saw this trend begin probably about 3 or 4 years ago when I heard my high school seniors talking about their younger middle school siblings in ways I hadn't heard them talk about them before. It was as if they didn't recognize them in a way. Their middle school social life was so different than their social life had been as middle schoolers. And that was the first sign that I saw. And what I've noticed in the last 3 to 5 years is that the ages at which children are being targeted with these messages is younger and younger. You know, I think you may have heard of a young woman whose name is Britney Spears. And that did not come out of nowhere. That was not an accident. This tween, T-W-E-E-N, label that you hear bandied about started as a marketing label. It was discovered that children from the age of 8 to 14, which they call tweens, and I think you have to be suspicious of anybody who wants to lump 8-year-olds with 14-year-olds, has about $35 billion in their pocket and the ability to influence another probably $600 billion or so of their parents' purchasing power. Once this was discovered, it was open season. In fact, I heard a story just this morning about it becoming such a problem that children are nagging their parents constantly to purchase items, saying things like, you know, I can't fit in, I won't be popular unless I have these things. And that is really the fundamental message, is you need to be popular, you need to fit in, and we're going to help you. All you have to do is buy our products.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teaching young children about sexuality.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with sexuality and family life educator Deborah Rothman about teaching young children about sexuality. Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about middle schoolers having a social life that's different mm-hmm. than their older siblings. Mm-hmm. In what way? I'm terrified to ask you this. In what way is it different?
Well, I'm sure you remember the stories that started to appear about 3 years ago about middle schoolers and oral sex, for mm-hmm. example.
That was so shocking to most of us.
Very shocking. It was off the radar screen for almost everybody, except, of course, for people like myself who'd been in the field for so long and are really in touch with these issues. And that was a great example of how we adults are not paying attention. And we have to start paying attention. And we're starting to pay more attention to middle school kids. I don't think people really want to face the fact that we have to start to pay attention to preschoolers. Here's my dream, you know, I'm getting old now. I have my dream, you know, that I want to fulfill after 30 years in this field. And it's why I write the books that I write, is that one day, and this is what I want to make a contribution to, it is families and schools that will be the primary point people in children's lives about this subject.
Rather than peers
and media. Mm-hmm. Heaven help us if we continue to allow popular culture raise our children, period, and especially about this issue. So that this most recent book is really my attempt to help young parents really get a leg up on this issue, really let go of their anxiety about this topic in ways that really are so unnecessary, and be there when their children begin asking these questions, or be there to encourage their asking these kinds of questions once they understand what's age appropriate, so that they can get there first with their children. And so that everything that children learn after that will be filtered through their messages, not the opposite, which is, oh, wait a minute, I don't like that ad. Let me talk to you about that. If you start the conversation then, you're being reactive, and we all need to learn how to be very proactive.
Now, you mentioned schools a minute ago. Are parents too dependent on schools right now? The idea is, oh, they'll tell them at school, I don't have to deal with this.
I think that's something else you need to take a hard look at, and that is, what are their schools doing? There is a myth out there that there's so much sex education going on in our schools, and that is absolutely not the case. Probably less than 10% of schools in this country have anything approaching comprehensive sexuality education, elementary, middle, high school. And the real truth is that programs in schools are becoming narrower and narrower in focus as the federal government, mm-hmm. with matching state dollars, continues to pour millions of dollars into abstinence-only education, which means that's really essentially what they teach. If you are only obliged to teach about abstinence, then anything else connected to the topic of sexuality, it is thought, detracts from that message. And the truth is also that the efficacy of these programs has never been proven, and yet the government keeps notching up the visibility of this program, the monetary contribution to it. So that's the first thing I want to say to parents. Find out what your school is doing. And chances are it's very watered down, and it's also developmentally too little too late, way too little too late. So, and mm-hmm. parents can't be advocates for their children's schooling unless they understand what truly is age appropriate.
How much is too much explanation of sex?
Well, if a young child asked you, how does a car run? You'd probably say something like, well, you put your foot on the gas, and that gives the car energy, and that allows it to move. Just like you have to eat good nutrition to give your body energy, a car needs energy to move, and that's what the gasoline provides. So you'd figure out how to say something like that. You would not say, well, let's go over and open up the hood so I can show you how the carburetor works. And we know that instinctively, that that's way over their head. They'll get very bored. They're not interested in that. We need to simplify the answer. But the worst that can happen is if they look at the carburetor and they lose interest, we'll know that we're off the mark. And we're not going to worry deeply that we gave them too much information about how cars work. We have a misplaced anxiety about sexual knowledge. And this is a very old point of view. In fact, it's as old as the Puritans probably, who really were not as much anti-sexual as they were anti-talking about sex. And we're stuck with that. Deep down inside, we really think there's something wrong or potentially even dangerous or harmful about, quote-unquote, too much information too soon. And as a result, as I indicated before, we tell way too little too late. This is misplaced. We don't fear any other kind of knowledge intrinsically. And this is one we have to really put a rest to because it gets in our way of truly being there for our children. So the short answer is, no, you can't give too much information. The child either won't get it or will get confused or bored, and you'll know it's too much, and you or the child will move on to some other topic. But it's not going to harm them in any way.
That's reassuring to parents,
yes,
too,
it is.
So how can we tell what they're ready for?
Well, let me talk a bit about this sequence of questions that I was mentioning mm-hmm. before. It's important to know the questions so you'll be prepared, but it's also important to understand them because they're very instructive about where children are as opposed to where we think they are. So, for example, children at about the age of 4, and I don't mean to set standards here. I don't want anybody to say, oh, my God, my child didn't ask that at 4. This is a predictable sequence. It's by no means not the only sequence. But it's common. And the reason I know it's common is because parents have told me over and over again over the years. So at about the age of 4, children often ask, where did I come from? Now, if you want to understand why they ask that, you have to realize, first and foremost, that it's not about sex or reproduction. They don't know anything about sex or reproduction. They don't care about it. It's really about geography, if you want the truth.
Not Chicago.
That's right. It's about they're cognitively able to understand the following concept. I was not always here. If you show them a picture of you and an older sibling, and they say, where was I? And you say, well, you weren't born yet. They can understand that. A 3-year-old is not going to be able to understand time in that way and will probably say something like, well, what does that have to do with anything? Why aren't I in the picture? It must be because you always did like him best, right? Because there's so many pictures of him around and so few of me. It really is literally a geography question by the age of 4 because they can understand that huge concept. Mm. And where did they come from? They came from right before they were born. They were in a special place inside mom called her uterus. And the child will probably say, oh, because it's a geography question and you've given a geography answer. It often takes them a whole year before they ask the next question, which is, how did I get out of there? Now, you might wonder, why does it take them a whole year to wonder that? You know, you and I would sort of say that right away. Well, if I used to be in there, how the heck did I get out? Well, it takes them a year because they cognitively will move on to a much more sophisticated concept called time and movement together, which is transportation. It's about distance. And we all know that 5-year-olds are fascinated by the clock. They're fascinated by all vehicles of transportation. And that's why it takes them often several months to move up to that new level to worry about that issue. And it seems very strange, but they really want to know about the birth process. That's all they want to know about. You know, by now, adults might be going to the library and getting books and videos. And this is not about sex or reproduction either. They don't know anything about sex or reproduction, but they do know a lot about transportation. And that's essentially what this one is about. And by the time they're 6, very often they will ask the question, but how did I get in there in the first place, which, of course, is the title of the book. And this is a vastly different question. This is actually about causation. This is about creation, which gives me chills every time I think about it. A 6-year-old understands creation, but they really do. Because, and this is one reason why we put them in first grade at the age of 6, because they understand the concept called cause and effect. So they're really asking, what caused me? And that's the time when they are really needing, gradually, and in bits and pieces, information about the conception process, including sperm and egg and vaginas and penises and sexual intercourse. This is a 6-year-old concept, which may surprise a lot of people, but I remind them by saying, okay, is it okay to talk to a 4-year-old about geography? Is it okay to talk to a 5-year-old about transportation? Is it okay to talk to a 6-year-old about causation? Because that's what these questions are really about. Mm-hmm. They are about the questions, the kinds of questions that children are asking about themselves and about everything in their life during the years of 4 to 6. And they're only incidentally about sex and reproduction. Mm-hmm.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teaching young children about sexuality.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are discussing with sexuality and family life educator Deborah Rothman how to teach young children about sexuality.
All right, we've got the idea of basically what kinds of things we need to work out, but suppose the kids don't ask the questions. Then what do we do?
Well, as I said before, the longer these conversations don't happen, the more awkward it becomes. And of course, if there's anything in our children's lives that we want them to know about, especially something that we know other people are going to try and influence them about, wouldn't we bring that up as early as we could figure it out? And that's my advice here. Figure out a way to have it be in your child's space. For example, visit a pregnant woman, visit a newborn, watch somebody breastfeed a baby, take them on an excursion to the library or the bookstore and just happen to look at some books that show babies developing. Mm-hmm. And that in itself will probably prompt the questions. If you haven't had this conversation by the time your children are in the third or fourth grade, fortunately, there's always the developmental context. Their bodies are going to change, and they need to hear about issues of puberty and pubescence. And that's an easy way of entering into this dialogue because it's a natural, logical context. Then there's always the media. You know, the bad news is the media is everywhere. The good news is the media is everywhere. And there are endless teachable moments where you can draw your child's attention to the subject in a variety of ways. Once again, the rule of thumb is treat it like any other subject. And when we do that, we take the anxiety connected with sex out of our mind, and it's amazing how common sense just kind of clicks in. And what looked impossible to figure out looks very possible.
In chapters 3 and 4 of But How'd I Get In There in the First Place, you explain that young children are more curious about the mechanics of reproduction than about sexual behavior. How can parents separate the two when talking to their kids?
This is really, really important. By the time I see kids in the fifth grade and I say, what is sex? They'll giggle for about a half an hour, but they'll tell me that sex equals intercourse, and they'll tell me that sex equals reproduction. And that's a real reflection of how we've explained it to them as they were growing up. And then I have to help them unlearn those concepts because they're way too narrow to get a complete understanding of what sexuality in this respect is about. So you have to remember that these questions about mechanics, the mechanics of reproduction, are not really questions about sex. And I would leave it at that, that the way that conception occurs is through this behavior called sexual intercourse. And then later on, I would, when the child seems to be noticing this concept of sex, not just where do babies come from, rather than saying sex is intercourse or sex is how babies are born, I would give the definition in a very human way. I would say sex is a very, very special and unique way that couples hug and kiss and hold and are tender with one another and put their bodies close together that makes them feel very, very special about one another and very close and also gives their bodies great pleasure. And that connects the human being to the body parts in a way that's humanistic and personalized and contrary to what kids are going to see in the media.
Yeah. What's funny is how the media has changed. I remember my husband said that when he was little, he knew how babies were made because babies were made by kissing. How did he know that? In the movies. Right. When people kiss, then there would be this fade out and the next thing you would see is there would be a baby.
Once again, our children are Martians. And they will fill in the pieces with whatever comes to their little minds unless we are right there beside them trying to interpret those messages.
What resources would you suggest for parents who want to learn more on this topic? You can mention your books and other resources as well.
My two favorite websites for parents are the one put out by Planned Parenthood Federation of America, which is plannedparenthood.org, and SECUS, which is the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States, and their website is SIECUS.org.
And for wonderful reading, we have But How'd I Get In There in the First Place by Deborah Rothman and Sex and Sensibility, The Thinking Parent's Guide to Talking Sense About Sex. And you have been a wonderful guide to talking sense about sex for all of us.
My pleasure. So I fulfilled a little bit of my dream today. This is great.
Yes. So Deborah Rothman, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Deborah Rothman's latest book, But How'd I Get In There in the First Place? Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8255. 1-800-7-9-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 153. If you can, tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our books, Washington, D.C. with Kids and Parents as Mentors, are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.